even among them I discovered so much that was revolting and hideous that my painting became more and more schematic and abstract. A good deal may be learned from a conversation that took place in 1958 between the Italian sculptor Marino Marini and the writer Edward Roditi. The dominant subject that Marini treated for years in many variations is the nude figure of a youth on a horse. In the early versions, which he described in the conversation as symbols of hope and gratitude after the end of the Second World War, the rider sits his horse with outstretched arms, his body bending slightly backward. In the course of years, the treatment of the subject became more abstract. The more or less classical form of the rider gradually dissolved. Speaking of the feeling underlying this change, Marini said, "If you look at my equestrian statues of the last 12 years in order of time, you will notice that the animal's panic steadily increases, but that it is frozen with terror and stands paralyzed rather than rearing or taking flight. That is all because I believe that we are approaching the end of the world. In every figure, I strove to express a deepening fear and despair. In this way, I am attempting to symbolize the last stage of a dying myth, the myth of the individual, victorious hero, of the humanist's man of virtue. In fairy tale and myth, the victorious hero is a symbol of consciousness. His defeat, as Marini says himself, means the death of the individual, a phenomenon that appears in a social context as the submergence of the individual in the mass, and in art, as the decline of the human element." When Roditi asked whether Marini's style was abandoning the classical canon on its way to becoming abstract, Marini replied, "As soon as art has to express fear, it must of itself depart from the classical ideal." He found subjects for his work in the bodies excavated at Pompeii. Roditi called Marini's art a Hiroshima style, for it conjures up visions of the end of a world. Marini admitted it. He felt, he said, as if he had been expelled from an earthly paradise. Until recently, the sculptor aimed at full sensual and powerful forms. But for the last 15 years, sculpture prefers forms in disintegration. The conversation between Marini and Roditi explains the transformation of sensory art into abstraction that should be clear to anyone who has ever walked open-eyed through an exhibition of modern art. However much he may appreciate or admire its formal qualities, he can scarcely fail to sense the fear, despair, aggression, and mockery that sounds like a cry from many works. The metaphysical anxiety that is expressed by the distress in these pictures and sculptures may have arisen from the despair of a doomed world, as it did with Marini. In other cases, the emphasis may lie on the religious factor, on the feeling that God is dead. There is a close connection between the two. At the root of this inner distress lies the defeat, or rather, the retreat of consciousness. In the upsurge of mystical experience, everything that once bound man to the human world, to earth, to time and space, to matter and the natural living of life, has been cast aside or dissolved. But unless the unconscious is balanced by the experience of consciousness, it will implacably reveal its contrary or negative aspect. The wealth of creative sound that made the harmony of the spheres or the wonderful mysteries of the primal ground have yielded to destruction and despair. In more than one case, the artist has become the passive victim of the unconscious. In physics, too, the world of the background has revealed its paradoxical nature. The laws of the inmost elements of nature, the newly discovered structures and relations in its basic unit, the atom, have become the scientific foundation for unprecedented weapons of destruction and opened the way to annihilation. Ultimate knowledge and the destruction of the world are the two aspects of the discovery of the primal ground of nature. Jung, who was as familiar with the dangerous dual nature of the unconscious as with the importance of human consciousness, could offer mankind only one weapon against catastrophe. The call for individual consciousness, which seems so simple and yet is so arduous. Consciousness is not only indispensable as a counterpoise to the unconscious and not only gives the possibility of meaning to life, it is also an eminently practical function. The evil witnessed in the world outside, in neighbors or neighboring peoples, can be made conscious as evil contents of our own psyche as well, and this insight would be the first step to a radical change in our attitude to our neighbors. Envy, lust, sensuality, lies, and all known vices are the negative, dark aspect of the unconscious, which can manifest itself in two ways. In the positive sense, it appears as a spirit of nature, creatively animating man, things, and the world. It is the thonic spirit that has been mentioned so often in this chapter. In the negative sense, the unconscious, that same spirit, manifests itself as a spirit of evil, as a drive to destroy. As has already been pointed out, the alchemists personified this spirit as the spirit Mercurius, and called it with good reason Mercurius Duplex, the two-faced dual Mercurius. In the religious language of Christianity, it is called the devil. But however improbable it may seem, the devil too has a dual aspect. In the positive sense, he appears as Lucifer, literally the light bringer. Looked at in the light of these difficult and paradoxical ideas, modern art, which we have recognized as symbolic of the thonic spirit, also has a dual aspect. In the positive sense, it is the expression of a mysteriously profound nature mysticism. In the negative, it can only be interpreted as the expression of an evil or destructive spirit. The two sides belong together, for the paradox is one of the basic qualities of the unconscious and its contents. To prevent any misunderstanding, it must once more be emphasized that these considerations have nothing to do with artistic and aesthetic values, but are solely concerned with the interpretation of modern art as a symbol of our time. Union of opposites. There is one more point to be made. The spirit of the age is in constant movement. It is like a river that flows on, invisibly but surely, and given the momentum of life in our century, even 10 years is a long time. About the middle of this century, a change began to come over painting. It was nothing revolutionary, nothing like the change that happened about 1910, which meant the reconstruction of art to its very foundations, but there were groups of artists who formulated their aims in ways not heard before. This transformation is going on within the frontiers of abstract painting. The representation of concrete reality, which springs from the primal human need of catching the passing moment on the wing, has become a truly concrete, sensuous art in the photography of such men as Francis-Henri Cartier-Bresson, Switzerland's Werner Bischoff, and others. We can therefore understand why artists continued on their own way of inwardness and imagination. For a good many of the young artists, however, abstract art as it had been practiced for many years offered no adventure, no field of conquest. Seeking the new, they found it in what lay nearest, yet had been lost, in nature and man. They were not and are not concerned with the reproduction of nature in pictures, but with the expression of their own emotional experience of nature. The French painter Alfred Manessier defined the aims of his art in these words: "What we have to reconquer is the weight of lost reality. We must make for ourselves a new heart, a new spirit, a new soul in the measure of man. The painter's true reality lies neither in abstraction nor in realism, but in the reconquest of his weight as a human being. At present, non-figurative art seems to me to offer the one opportunity for the painter to approach the inward reality of himself and to grasp the consciousness of his essential self, or even of his being. It is only by the reconquest of his position, I believe, that the painter will be able, in the time to come, to return slowly to himself, to rediscover his own weight, and so to strengthen it, that it can even reach the outward reality of the world." Jean Bazin speaks in similar terms. "It is a great temptation for the painter of today to paint the pure rhythm of his feeling, the most secret pulse of his heart, instead of embodying it in a concrete form. That, however, leads only to a desiccated mathematics or a kind of abstract expressionism which ends in monotony and a progressive impoverishment of form. But a form that can reconcile man with his world is an art of communion by which man, at any moment, can recognize his own unformed countenance in the world." What, in fact, artists now have at heart is a conscious reunion of their own inward reality with the reality of the world or of nature, or, in the last resort, a new union of body and soul, matter and spirit. That is their way to the reconquest of their weight as human beings. Only now is the great rift that set in with modern art between great abstraction and great realism being made conscious and on the way to being healed. For the onlooker, this first becomes evident in the changed atmosphere in the works of these artists. There radiates from the pictures of such artists as Alfred Manessier or the Belgian-born painter Gustave Saint-Dié, in spite of all abstraction, a belief in the world, and in spite of all intensity of feeling, a harmony of forms and colors that often attains serenity. In the French painter Jean Lussat's famous tapestries of the 1950s, the exuberance of nature pervades the picture. His art could be called sensuous as well as imaginative. We find a serene harmony of forms and colors also in the work of Paul Klee. This harmony was what he had always been striving for. Above all, he had realized the necessity of not denying evil. Even evil must not be a triumphant or degrading enemy, but a power collaborating in the whole. But Klee's starting point was not the same. He lived near the dead and the unborn, at an almost cosmic distance from this world, while the younger generation of painters can be said to be more firmly rooted in earth. An important point to notice is that modern painting, just when it has advanced far enough to discern the union of the opposites, has taken up religious themes. The metaphysical void seems to have been overcome, and the utterly unexpected has happened. The church has become a patron of modern art. We need only mention here All Saints at Basel, with windows by Alfred Manessier, Assis Church, with pictures by a large number of modern artists, the Matisse Chapel at Vence, and the church at Audincourt, which has works by Jean Bazin and the French artist Fernand Léger. The admission of modern art to the church means more than an act of broad-mindedness on the part of its patrons. It is symbolic of the fact that the part played by modern art in relation to Christianity is changing. The compensatory function of the old hermetic movements has made way for the possibility of collaboration. In discussing the animal symbols of Christ, it was pointed out that the light and the thonic spirits belonged to each other. It seems as if the moment had come today when a new stage in the solution of this millennial problem might be reached. What the future will yield, we cannot know, whether the bridging of the opposites will give positive results or whether the way will lead through yet more unimaginable catastrophes. There is too much anxiety and too much dread at work in the world, and this is still the predominant factor in art and society. Above all, there is still too much unwillingness on the part of the individual to apply to himself and his life the conclusions that can be drawn from art, although he might be ready to accept them in art. The artist can often express many things unconsciously and without awakening hostility, which are resented when they are expressed by a psychologist, a fact that could be demonstrated even more conclusively in literature than in the visual arts. Confronted by the statements of the psychologist, the individual feels directly challenged, but what the artist has to say, particularly in our century, usually remains in an impersonal sphere. And yet, it seems important that the suggestion of a more whole and therefore a more human form of expression should have become visible in our time. It is a glimmer of hope, symbolized for me, at the time of writing, 1961, by a number of paintings by the French artist Pierre Soulages. Behind a cataract of huge black rafters, there glimmers a clear, pure blue or a radiant yellow. Light is dawning behind darkness. End of side 8. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.